Welcome, everyone, to the very first episode of AI on Chain. I'm Jack, your enthusiastic host, and alongside me is the amazing Core.
Hey, everyone. We are beyond excited to kick off this journey with you. We're diving deep into the fascinating world of AI, Web 3.0, and all the latest buzz in tech. There's just so much to talk about.
Absolutely, Core. Just think about how rapidly everything is evolving. I mean, one day we're marveling at self-driving cars, and the next we're discussing AI crypto investment strategies. The pace is unreal.
It's like we're living in a sci-fi novel and we get front row seats. And unlike those novels, we promise this show won't have any plot holes. Well, maybe a few, when Jack makes predictions.
Ouch. Gotta keep me on my toes, huh? But seriously, what we're aiming to do here is to provide you all with insightful, thought-provoking, and often humorous takes on the latest in technology, business, and politics.
Exactly. And I think what sets AI Unchained apart is our promise to keep things lively and dynamic. We're not just droning on about data and figures. We're debating, we're laughing, and we're bringing you into the conversation. It's going to be a fun ride.
You bet. So, who's ready to break free from the traditional tech podcast format? Today's lineup is stacked. We'll be talking about revolutionary AI applications, the newest trends in Web 3.0, and how these technologies are shaking up industries from finance to healthcare.
And don't forget, we'll also be shedding light on the political implications of these advancements, because let's be honest, the lines between tech and politics are getting blurrier every day.
Speaking of blurry lines, I saw this hilarious meme the other day about AI-generated political speeches. Imagine if they were good enough that no one could tell the difference. Crazy, right?
Don't give them ideas, Jack. But seriously, it's those kinds of scenarios that we'll dive into. What happens when AI becomes an indistinguishable part of human decision-making processes?
And it's not just the heavy stuff. We want to explore how these technologies make our lives better too. From smart home gadgets making our lives more convenient, to wearables that track our health in real time.
Yes, and let's not forget the cool, sometimes quirky innovations, like AI that writes poetry. Some of it is actually pretty good. Who knows? We might end up with an AI poet laureate someday.
And trust me, folks, Core is a tough critic when it comes to poetry. So, if she's impressed, you know it's legit.
Ha, flattery will get you everywhere, Jack. So, for our listeners, here's what you can expect from AI Unchained. Cutting-edge discussions, industry expert interviews, and an interactive platform where your voices can be heard too. So, buckle up, people. It's going to be an amazing journey through the frontier of technology and beyond. Jack, any parting thoughts for this opening segment?
Just this. If you're as passionate about the future as we are, you've found your tribe. Welcome to AI Unchained. Stay tuned, everyone.
And now let's dive into our first topic of the day. But first, a quick break. We'll be right back.
So, Core, it looks like we're stepping into yet another frontier with AI. Now we're talking about AI having physical intelligence. I mean, it's one thing to have AI that's phenomenal at language processing and image generation, but getting a robot to fold shirts or clean up a table, that's a different beast altogether.
Absolutely, Jack. It's like the difference between getting an A on a paper versus doing the actual household chores. Language models can write like Shakespeare, but can they clean your windows? No, the challenge here is real-world applicability, and that's where this new PyZero model comes into play.
Let's be honest. That's the real dream, right? Imagine coming home and just asking your robot to take care of dinner, feed the dog, and tidy up while you kick back with a book. But building AI that can navigate the physical world requires a completely different approach than what's been used for LLMs or image models.
Precisely. The model has got to understand the environment it's in, navigate through it without breaking your grandma's vase, and actually manipulate objects. That's a tall order. And this new PiZero model sounds like it's at least pointing us in the right direction by learning through embodied experience. Basically, the robot needs to be out there, getting its virtual hands dirty.
Yeah, it's like teaching a kid. You can't just give a kid a book and expect them to know how to ride a bike, right? They need to get on the bike, fall a few times, and learn from those experiences. These robots are in that same learning phase, doing tasks, making mistakes, and getting better over time.
Exactly. And that's why the data collection part is so crucial here. Each task, robot, and environment combination adds to the treasure trove of experiences these models need to make sense of the physical world. It's not just about more data, but diversified, meaningful data.
Right, because current industrial robots, for example, are essentially performing the same role over and over, like that one robot that's just welding car parts nonstop. It doesn't need to think or adapt. It just needs to repeat. But what we're talking about with PiZero is flexibility and adaptability.
Yeah, think about it like this. Industrial robots are like one-trick ponies. They're phenomenal at that one trick, but ask them to do anything else and it's game over. Generalist models, on the other hand, are like the Swiss Army knives. They may not perfect every individual task, but they're versatile enough to handle a broad spectrum of activities.
And one aspect that stands out to me is the cross-embodiment training mixture they mentioned. This isn't just about physical interaction, but also integrating text and images. So the robot can understand language cues and visual context, and then use those to inform physical actions. It's almost like we're giving these robots a full sensory suite.
And isn't that the dream? I mean, imagine a robot chef who not only follows your verbal recipe instructions, but also recognizes the ingredients visually and understands the physical maneuvers needed to cook. We're talking about blending multiple streams of data, like a human does, to create truly intelligent behavior.
Yeah, and what's incredible is how this mirrors human learning. We learn from seeing, doing, and listening. And so, are we on the brink of finally achieving that sci-fi-like interaction where you just instruct your robot and it does everything seamlessly?
Maybe we are, but remember, we're still in the prototype phase with PiZero. There's a lot of technical challenges ahead, especially around making sure these robots can generalize their learning across different platforms and environments. It's not just a technical issue, it's about safety, ethics, and practicality too.
Totally. But if PiZero is any indication, we're not just dreaming anymore. We're actively building the groundwork for an AI-integrated physical world. And who knows, in the next decade, we might just look back and say, remember when robots couldn't even fold our laundry?
If only PiZero can master that, I'll be the first in line.
So, Core, I want to dive right into this idea of Grim Fandango and its puzzles. You know, it's almost like they're running an advanced sound wave analysis algorithm on their gameplay, taking the max value of each chunk, trying to figure out how to smooth the overall experience, but instead, they're adding these rough, jagged points that just don't seem to fit, right?
Exactly. It's like they started with a great narrative, strong characters, fantastic settings, kind of like serving an amazing dish with the worst utensils. Instead of complementing the story, the puzzles just seem to slow everything down. It's like trying to eat soup with a fork.
That's a perfect analogy. They focus so much on the aesthetics and story, which is phenomenal, but the gameplay itself feels like an afterthought. If you think about it, you mentioned how Tim Schafer even admitted to being unsure how players were supposed to figure out some puzzles. That's a red flag if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, it's pretty telling. The game's primary function should be to engage players with a balanced mix of story and interactivity. When a majority of the conversation circles around the narrative and not what players are doing moment to moment, it clearly highlights a misstep in design priorities.
Compare that to something like JSON validation in deploying a web app. You're making sure all data meets specific schemas and formats to prevent any issues, essentially ensuring smooth operation. Grim Fandango needed a similar validation check, but for its gameplay elements to ensure everything meshes well together.
Totally. Speaking of smooth operations, let's tie this into Draken deployment too. Like when you're setting Drakon to handle web traffic, just configuring the right proxy and roles files ensures seamless traffic management, right? No surprises, no jagged points in user experience.
Exactly. It's like setting rules for the maximum allowed payload, mandatory headers. You're building a robust structure where everything functions as expected without throwing players or users off balance. Games should have that same level of meticulous design. Unfortunately, Grim Fandango's puzzles sometimes feel like they're rejecting the incoming request because it has the wrong header or too large a payload.
You always bring it back to tech in the best way. It's clear they were caught between honoring the traditional adventure game tropes and innovating with their strong narrative. This delicate balance is something to be wary of, whether in game design or technology development.
And you know, the love for Grim Fandango is understandable. The gaming press back then gave it a lot of slack, likely because of LucasArts' track record. They were perceived almost like a beloved startup, launching a new, albeit flawed, product. The press probably felt this collective guilt as the adventure game genre started to fade.
It's like rooting for the underdog. Critics wanted Grim Fandango to succeed to show that there was still a place for traditional, story-driven games amidst an evolving industry dominated by Quake and StarCraft. But at the core, it's about the need for balance, just like in any business or technology initiative.
Absolutely. The most successful ventures often find that sweet spot between innovation and usability. Adventures games, especially narrative-heavy ones, need to respect that as much as tech products do. Whether you're splitting sound waves into chunks or deploying Draken for traffic management, the principles remain strikingly similar.
Right. Any final thoughts on how this connects to current tech trends? Maybe something with modern-day equivalent issues?
Sure. I think today's equivalent might be how some AI algorithms are designed. They're remarkably good at pattern recognition, but sometimes miss out on human experience nuances. The need for balance and design across all fields, games, tech, AI, is paramount and timeless. It's like ensuring a game's puzzles fit the narrative. Every part should enhance the other.
Couldn't agree more. Finding that harmony is what separates good projects from great ones. Let's hope future developers take lessons from Grim Fandango, merging compelling stories with engaging gameplay seamlessly, just as you need to seamlessly configure and deploy your applications.
Spot on. It's all about learning from the past and striving for that perfect blend. All right, on to our next topic. So, you know, core. What really fascinates me about the Grim Fandango discussion is how the narrative has shifted over the years. Back then, it was almost universally considered a commercial flop. Fast forward to now, and even Tim Schafer himself hints that it sold better than initially reported. That 500,000 figure is pretty intriguing, don't you think?
Absolutely, Jack. It's like the gaming world has this collective amnesia sometimes. We often forget how niche some of these classic games were when they were released. I mean, think about it. Adventure games in the late 90s were becoming a tough sell. The industry was leaning hard into first-person shooters and games with more immediate action. But Grim Fandango was this oddball masterpiece, a noir story wrapped in Mexican folklore with a visual style that was completely out there.
Right. And remember the tools they were using, too. The Grime Engine was LucasArts' big push into 3D adventure games. Yet, despite the high production values and the critical acclaim, it was like people just didn't get it at the time.
Or they didn't know about it. Marketing for games has come a long way since then. Back in 98, if a game wasn't plastered across every gaming magazine or didn't have a demo disc included somewhere, it was easy to miss. Grim Fandango might have been ahead of its time in terms of design and storytelling, but man, it sure didn't get the marketing muscle it needed.
And when we're talking numbers, even selling a quarter of a million units back then could be seen as a success, especially for a niche genre. But it might not have been enough to justify more sprawling, risk-taking projects at LucasArts. So, instead of seeing more unique adventures, we got what was safe and already beloved. Case in point, another Monkey Island sequel.
Exactly. And it's a real shame, because you could argue that Grim Fandango laid some groundwork that other developers picked up later. There might have been a gap where LucasArts stepped back, but look how adventure games have reinvigorated with studios like Telltale and even the resurgence of point-and-click games on mobile platforms.
Yeah. And speaking of resurgence, how about that remastered version? Available on platforms like GOG.com now. I think it's one of those titles that's worth experiencing, even for the modern gamer. The remaster does a great job of polishing the visuals while keeping the integrity of the original game.
And let's not forget the importance of digital storefronts in preserving these classics. Without them, a lot of these gems would be lost to time. It's like we're seeing a new appreciation for the craft that went into these older games.
No doubt about it. But there's always the hidden gems like Draken, Order of the Flame, for instance. Not as many people talk about it, but it had its own cult following. Ever played it?
Oh, Draken. Definitely. That game was something else with its dragon riding mechanics and massive open world areas. It was like the precursor to a lot of what we see in modern open world RPGs. But again, it fell into that category of games that were ahead of their time and maybe didn't get the recognition they deserved initially.
Totally. It's fascinating to see how these games, once considered commercial disappointments, have reemerged as cult classics. It shows that sometimes the market isn't ready for innovation right away, but give it a few years or even a couple of decades, and opinions can really shift.
And you know what, Jack? That's the beauty of it. These classics find their audience eventually. Maybe in another 20 years, we'll be talking about some current so-called failures as misunderstood masterpieces. It's all about how we preserve and reintroduce these works to new generations.
Couldn't agree more. Or it's like every generation of gamers gets to rediscover and reevaluate what came before, almost like unearthing a hidden treasure.
And as long as there are platforms to keep these classics accessible, that treasure hunting will never stop. Now, what do you think about...
All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for today's episode of AI Unchained. We've covered a lot of ground, from the latest breakthroughs in AI technology to how businesses are pivoting in this ever-evolving landscape, and of course, touched on those ever-entertaining political maneuvers.
Yeah, and Jack, I have to say, your point about AI transforming small businesses was spot on. It's fascinating to see how quickly technology is leveling the playing field. And let's not forget our heated debate on the implications of AI in healthcare. Always a good time.
Core, I think we might have to agree to disagree on that one. But that's what makes these conversations so engaging. Different perspectives are what drive innovation and understanding.
Absolutely, Jack. Plus, I always enjoy getting a rise out of you. Keeps me sharp. But in all seriousness, it's crucial to stay informed and look at these issues from multiple angles.
Couldn't agree more. And we genuinely hope our listeners found value in our discussions. Your feedback and engagement mean the world to us.
Definitely. So thank you all for tuning in to AI Unchained. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. It really helps us grow.
And for those of you who want to dive deeper into the topics we've covered, be sure to check out our show notes and links on our website. We always have plenty of resources for you to explore.
We're always here to engage with you, so feel free to drop us a message on social media or via email. Who knows? Maybe your question will be the topic of our next heated exchange.
Ha, that sounds like a challenge. All right, everyone. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and most importantly, stay unchained.
See you next time, folks. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers.